That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 144 of That Great Business Show, where we bring you great tips, insights, and unique business opportunities, all in a perfectly packaged podcast with thanks to DoneDeal.ie. I am Conal O'Mora and Fáilte Isteach. On this episode, Stuart Dempsey of GamerFest, which is a series of festivals aimed at the massive worldwide gamer community. As an industry, it's now reckoned to be more valuable than both movies and music combined, which means there are plenty of opportunities to play for. All our tips and insights are brought to you thanks to DoneDeal Motors, the only place to look for your new or previously loved car, van, or truck, DoneDeal.ie.
DoneDeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on DoneDeal. Are you looking for a seven-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit DoneDeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
Every day is a school day in business, and on That Great Business Show for me today, I have been introduced to Ryan Marr, Mr. Gibbon, Auntie Tinkerbell, and The Garage Show. And if you haven't ever heard of these enterprising young people, fear not, because you and I are going to learn all about them from my guest today. Because today we are talking gaming, but we'll also be talking about other businesses and possibly other failed businesses. But wait till you hear how big a business gaming is, and I hope you're sitting down. Revenue in video games market is projected to reach $385 billion this year, and the number of users is expected to amount to 3 billion users by 2027. Those figures are nuts. A man who's not nuts, though, is Stuart Dempsey, who is CEO and founder of GameFest, a festival for gamers. Stuart, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Thank you, Conal. Good to be here.
Do you know Ryan Marr, Mr. Gibbon, Auntie Tinkerbell, and The Garage Show?
I do indeed.
I looked them up. They are very popular people. And why are they so popular?
Well, they would be what you'd call gaming content creators. So anyone that watches gaming content on YouTube, for example, on Twitch, or if they have children that are watching content on these platforms, these are the kind of content creators that they're watching. So these particular content creators are Irish-based. They're doing great things. They come to our events. They're on a great trajectory, so we can support them in any way we can at the events.
Now, when you are talking about their business, I know it sounds nuts. It sounds nuts to me, but obviously it's not completely nuts because they do have huge, massive following. People sit down and watch them play. Am I right?
They do indeed. They would do a range of content. So whether it's kind of humor-led, whether it's playing games. Yeah, the audiences are absolutely massive. The rewards are massive. There's more and more brands looking to engage with these content creators. So they're doing great things and it's good to see.
Well, I looked at Auntie Tinkerbell and I also looked at The Garage Show. Tell me what either or both of them do.
Well, The Garage Show, first and foremost, he would be very specific to the video game FIFA, which is obviously the soccer game that everyone plays.
So I watched him watching a game. Isn't that nuts?
It is a little bit, yeah. He is actually contracted now to Norwich Football Club in the UK. So a lot of these English football clubs, for example, they're looking to engage with a younger audience and they know that that audience is spending a lot of time gaming and they want to get them to the matches. They want them through the turnstiles, if you like. So they have The Garage Show there and he's creating FIFA content for them, engaging with that younger audience, making that connection to the football club. So it all makes sense when you step back and look at it. And he's doing great things. We've worked with him for a long time. He's full of energy, full of humor, funny guy, full of energy. Yeah.
Young lad. Yeah. And he's obviously making a good living.
Yeah, I believe so. I don't know his financials, but...
We don't do financials here. So long as you're making a living, we're happy.
I think he's making a living and he works very hard. And the thing I'll say for these content creators is, you know, you see a video on YouTube, for example, it might be 20 minutes long, but the reality is they've probably spent the entire day making it between edits, sound, music. They work incredibly hard and, you know, they see the absolutely global content creators and they're aspiring to that. So it's good to see.
And that is The Gara Show. And what about Auntie Tinkerbell?
Yeah, so Auntie Tinkerbell, she's a female content creator. We've worked closely with her since our very first event in 2017. She's been a huge supporter of Gamerfest. We have a great relationship with her. So again, she would play a variety of games online. Each of these content creators would generally pick a particular game because each game has a particular audience. So no gamer generally plays every single game under the sun. They like to focus on one thing, no different than a sports fan likes football but mightn't like rugby, for example. So they will focus on a particular game, focus on that audience and build it over time, live stream, engage with them. So again, another great Irish content creator doing good things.
Now, their business or their twist on a business is different to hardcore gaming, as in creating the games. Because once upon a time, only about 5, 6, 7 years ago, who knows with COVID, we were going to, and by that I mean this country, was going to be huge in creating games. And to the best of my knowledge, that has not happened.
It is happening slowly and we're seeing things more recently now that I think is going to accelerate that process. So for example, the government recently announced a game development tax credit. So that's going to be really important for attracting FDI into the country in terms of those multinational game developers. And
is
from there,
good
it can
enough?
Grow.
Enough? Because it struck me, looking at it, that it's not overly generous.
You'd have to talk to the game developers on that one. And it really comes down to the criteria of the game that they're developing, etc. I've spoken to a handful of them. I know that the IDA are engaged with them. So I have heard positive things about it. But I think it would depend on the particular developer that you talk to. But it's a very good start. And I know from talking with stakeholders in government, this is a priority for them. So, you know, we have support from them now for our events, which is fantastic. So there's definitely good things happening. There's more and more career pathways and education pathways for game development and design in Ireland. So that's also very important. And then you've got, you know, state bodies like Enterprise Ireland. You've got a board called IMIRCH, which represents Irish game developers. They're all doing incredible work as well. But we're really only scratching the surface and the potential is absolutely huge.
And your intro to this industry was in 2017, which is about the time that I thought that we were meant to do big things. Now, you know, that's 7 odd years ago. It's a slow start, very slow start. You're trying to put a positive gloss on it. I'm not thinking the same.
It's a difficult one. You know, I had the fortune of meeting with Minister Simon Coveney about 2 weeks ago to talk about the games industry, to talk about the potential for the games industry. So there's no doubt that there's a very strong awareness in government of the potential of the industry. And they are definitely moving in the right direction.
And what did you tell him in terms of numbers? $385 billion. I mean, that's just so big, it's like nuts.
It is. I'd often call it the a silent behemoth because, you know, there's so little awareness of the scale of the games industry internationally. You know, a kind of a well-quoted stat is that the gaming industry is more valuable than music and movies combined.
Yes.
And,
yes,
you know, gaming now has become a pillar of pop culture for young people. It's no different than cinema, than fashion, than music. It's how people are engaging with each other. It's how they're communicating. And I think one thing you saw during the pandemic was, during that awful period of lockdown when young people couldn't engage with one another, they were able to use gaming to stay in touch, to connect, to play games while talking in groups. And I think even a lot of the most skeptical parents would have seen that, you know, there is value in this. Obviously, it's important to have gaming as part of a balanced lifestyle with exercise and traditional sports.
But like a parent.
Yeah, and I am a parent, so I'm well aware of it. So we're grappling with that ourselves because, you know, kids want to play loads of games. So you just have to manage that as best you can. But certainly off the back of the pandemic, you know, even in terms of esports, you would have seen suddenly FIFA tournaments on Sky Sports News. You saw Lando Norris, the Formula One driver, competing in sim racing tournaments online. So suddenly it was on the radar of much, much more people. And even for Gamerfest, for our events, we found since the pandemic, you know, talking to brands, talking to potential partners, there's a much bigger awareness now of the size of the audience. And, you know, in terms of what's happening in Ireland, there's no doubt it's moving in the right direction. I'm expecting things to accelerate significantly over the next 12 to 18 months. I've no doubt about that.
Well, talk to me about that. What are you expecting? And where from and what is?
Well, what I have said all along is that, you know, Ireland as a country, when we actually identify a sector or an industry and we go after it, we do it very, very well. So if you look at the medtech sector in the 80s and 90s, or pharmaceutical, if you look at big tech since the 2000s, we have the state agencies, they coordinate incredibly well, whether that's Enterprise Ireland, IDA, Department of Trade, etc. So if you look at the, you know, the medtech sector as things stand, and I was involved in a medtech conference a number of years ago, you know, where that is at the moment, you know, 9 of the top 10 biggest medtech companies in the world are based here. There's 450 medical device companies in the country employing 40,000 people with revenues of over 10 billion euros a year. So that should be the target for the games industry in Ireland, as far as I'm concerned.
And how are we going to go and get those companies here? Because again, I'll go back to, I'd say for the third or fourth time maybe, slow start.
Yeah, slow start. And to be honest, it's not necessarily my role or my strategy to get these companies here. We see GamerFest as a platform.
Yeah.
Well, you know, from looking from afar and quoting the examples I've mentioned there in terms of the medical device sector, etc., I think it's going to take a lot of coordination. It's going to take a strategy from Ireland to target these companies successfully. We secure FDI and multinational companies coming here. From there, we have spin-offs of indigenous Irish gaming companies, which is what we want, which is the end game. Employment grows, expertise grows. There's more and more courses in colleges and universities now offering the educational pathways that are required. So
there's a whole heap of students who also do nothing else but game as well.
So. Yeah, so I think young people, and you'll have to talk to them directly, but, you know, if they're looking at career opportunities and they love gaming, then, you know, why not a career in game development and design? You
because
know?
A lot of them go to Vancouver, amongst other places, don't they? Isn't that a big centre for it?
Yeah, there's a number of big centres, and there's no doubt that Ireland is a little bit behind the curve in terms of the games industry and the potential of attracting companies here and driving it on, but We're by no means too late. I mean, it's an industry that continues to grow. The audience continues to grow. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
And the real reason that you're here is to talk about GamerFest, which is your festival of gaming, of which you are running a number of events. How did you get into that?
Well, looking back to 2017, as you mentioned, I was in a full-time marketing role at the time. I was on the lookout to do something myself in terms of a business. I was looking at a variety of options. I had done lots of gaming in college, but, you know, between young family, career, it took a little bit of a backseat. But in 2017, I saw the growth of big gaming events internationally.
Where did you see that, or what prompted you?
Yeah, so originally they were developing in Southeast Asia, going right back, and they were filling absolute stadiums with people watching these events. Then they're moving across Europe. The UK had them. So I felt there was a gap in Ireland to do something similar. So
just pick up on that. Mm-hmm. Just to put, again, half of the audience here have no real idea of what you're talking about. Stadiums full of people watching people playing games, correct?
Correct.
How many people might be in one of those stadiums?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about a traditional large-scale stadium, you'd be talking 50, 60,000 people.
Going to watch other people play. And they're not playing football. It's not like up and down a pitch or anything. They're playing a game.
They're playing games on a stage with big screens. 50 or 60,000 people there that are absolutely passionate about that game, that play it themselves, and they want to see it played better than them. And it's just like traditional sports. That's why you go to a football match or a rugby match. You want to see people doing something you love to an incredibly high standard, and the same applies here.
And I'm not looking for specifics, but I mean, these people are paying a decent amount of money per ticket to get in there, are they?
Yeah, certainly. It depends on the venue and the event, but it's comparable to traditional sports. And, you know,
100 quid a ticket, more?
It honestly depends. Yeah, it could range anything, from 30 euros to 200 euros, depending on the particular event.
60,000.
Sure.
I'm loving this.
And, you know, that's only the live audience, Conal. I mean, if you talk about what's being live streamed, you're into the hundreds and thousands and the millions of viewers right there. So it's absolutely massive.
And I gave you that stat at the beginning about the numbers of people, of users, 3 billion. That actually sounds too big for me. I mean, there's maybe 8 billion on planet Earth. The name of God, I mean, almost half of them playing games, really?
Yeah, and I think what drives some of that is mobile games. So if you have someone playing Candy Crush on their smartphone.
Ah, okay.
They're gaming.
All right, okay.
So, you know, it's not necessarily sitting down in front of a games console or a PC for 3 hours at a time. You know, gaming does capture mobile games, which are absolutely massive as well. So when you take that into consideration, I think it's absolutely 3 billion because, you know, the proliferation of smartphones, it's absolutely believable.
Now, one day, I'm sure you would love to have Croke Park packed out with people paying you 200 quid to go to your GamerFest. At the moment, what kinds of numbers are you doing?
So we would be getting about 5,000 visitors per event at the moment. And we're looking to scale.
Mostly Irish, do you think?
Yeah, it's usually about 90% Irish.
But people are travelling in.
They will, usually depending on the type of esports tournament. So we can talk about esports specifically in a minute. Depending on the tournaments you have, sometimes depending on the special guests you have, some people will travel to actually meet them, to meet their favourite YouTubers, to meet their favourite streamers. So it fluctuates, but generally about 10% international.
It's fantastic. It is an absolutely unknown world to me. Esports. Talk to me about esports.
So esports falls within gaming. So if you're very passionate about a particular game, you spend a lot of time playing it, and you want to play it competitively against other players for prizes, you're engaged in esports. So that can be anything from FIFA, from sports games. NFL Madden, for example, in the US would be popular. But it also can be, you know, shooting games, any range of games. Again, the audiences online watching this content are absolutely massive. The rewards are massive. All of the big brands now are beginning to enter that space. So if you look at the biggest esports tournaments in the world now, you will see MasterCard, you will see Mercedes-Benz. Likewise now with GamerFest, fortunately, we're looking working with some great brands like Air, McDonald's, all looking to engage with the gaming community. So
because the demographic is ideal for them, and the demographic that you are targeting is what?
We would be 16 to 30, primarily.
Not younger, no?
We would get a good deal of younger visitors to the event, but the content, the event itself, and we absolutely welcome families to the event. We see a lot of them there, but primarily it would be in and around 16 plus. And, you know, these brands know that if you want to engage with a particular audience or community, you have to go where they are. And young people now are gaming, and that's what they're passionate about. So they can't ignore it. And as I say, since the pandemic in particular, we have a lot of great conversations with brands now that are interested in getting into this space. But oftentimes, Conal, just like yourself, it's a new space for many. You know, partners and brands can be cautious about getting involved. They want to do it the right way. So fortunately, we're in a position then to be able to develop a strategy with them. How will their existing marketing campaigns align with what they're doing with us, with the gaming community? And that's something that works well for us.
And you said that you have a vision of being much, much bigger. How much bigger can you go in this country for a start?
Well, we have a couple of things happening at the moment. I mean, to date, GamerFest has been pretty much an out and out consumer show. So if you are interested in gaming, you come along to the event. We work with a lot of the leading gaming publishers, so we will have the latest games available to play. We have multiple live stages where we have special guests, panel discussions, we have virtual reality gaming, we have esports tournaments. So that's growing all the time. So we'd certainly like to have 10,000 visitors within the next 18 months. We think that's very achievable. In addition to that, a new area that we're rolling out, which we're really excited about, is the industry zone at GamerFest. And this ties into the kind of things I spoke about a few moments ago in terms of career development opportunities, educational pathways, acting as a platform for all of the companies in Ireland in the gaming space to engage with the gaming community. So we have Enterprise Ireland now involved for our next event, which is fantastic. And ultimately then what we're going to have is Irish game developers given the opportunity to pitch for investment. We're going to have investors coming to the event. So that will be a standalone conference running alongside the main consumer show where we can actually have that industry piece. So that's very exciting. We've had amazing feedback and it's coming together really well.
That is very exciting. However, we have to take a quick break because I want to talk and I want to make sure that everybody listening is going to hear this. We are going to do a full pivot because I know what brought Stuart into this business. And it is a story that is probably, well, anybody in business will really, really identify with it. It was a little bit tough for a while. Back after this.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a 7-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
All that great business show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
And with me now is Stuart Dempsey, who is CEO and founder of GamerFest. Stuart, just before the break there, I put out the possibility of a pivot. Now, you pivoted into the gamer direction, but before that, you were in the family concrete business. Tell me about that.
I was indeed. My father had created a very successful concrete manufacturing business in Galway. So, you know, I grew up working in that business to a large extent. So summers, holidays, you know, I would originally work in the yard and then I graduated to driving machinery, then into the office. So it was a thriving business. We had 70 staff. We worked with the biggest construction companies and contractors in the country on a range of products. So I did my degree in marketing in 2004. Joined the family business full-time as a marketing executive in 2005 and became marketing manager then in 2007. So loved every minute of it. I knew all the staff, you know, many of whom had been there, you know, 30, 40 years. Knew all of the customers at this stage. We knew our bankers, our suppliers. So really, really enjoyed the role and was getting on really well. Obviously, 2008, we had the financial crisis, the construction crisis. And overnight, everything changed. You know, we had a fall in revenues of about 80%. Our bad debt skyrocketed. We had to make a lot of very tough decisions. At the same time, the health of my father deteriorated, which meant he wasn't involved in the day-to-day operation of the business during those difficult times. So we were looking at, you know, really challenging scenarios in terms of restructuring, redundancies. So, you know, I was kind of 26 at the time. So a lot of those decisions fell to me. Very, very difficult in terms of letting people go that had been with us for 30, 40 years. And it was 4 years of firefighting. And ultimately, in October 2012, we had a few issues facing the company that we just found were absolutely insurmountable. And we had to cease trading at that point. So it was an incredibly difficult time. You throw in the fact it was a family business and the stigma associated with that. You know, still very raw to this day. So oftentimes you'd question, did I do enough? Did I have the experience? Would someone who had more business experience than me have been able to do more? But I look back and I did absolutely everything I could. I worked very, very hard. You know, we treated all staff as best we could in a very difficult scenario. You know, we were faced with really big challenges in terms of even some of our best and longest customers just weren't in a position to pay us because their credit facilities had dried up. So it was a very, very painful time, but you come through it. Certainly learned a lot. I was 30 years of age when we ceased trading. We were expecting our first child 3 weeks after we ceased trading. So that was incredibly tough. It was tough for my wife. But you take a lot from it. Probably took a while to recover. So from that point then, I went into a range of marketing roles in terms of career. But yeah, I think the entrepreneurial itch never left me. My father was someone that I deeply admired, the way that he created the business, ran the business, how we treated people, how we treated staff. As I said, a lot of staff were there 30, 40 years, which was testament to him. So then, you know, I was on the lookout. And as you mentioned, it all came to a head for Gamerfest in 2017.
Well, we kind of work around to that, but my God, it must have been so tough. And I love talking to people who are open and honest about it like you, because many businesses, many, many businesses have real problems and they continue and they will continue to do so. I just really like to make people understand how tough real business is. And do you want to go into any of the detail of how bad things were? Did you sleep?
No. Woke up a lot. It was very much a 9-to-5 business. So what I found was on a Friday evening, 5 o'clock, the clock would stop. You'd leave the office and I wasn't necessarily getting phone calls about anything pressing on my mobile. So you would have the weekend to try and regroup after a tough week. What I would find was Sunday evening, it's coming back again now. You're back in Monday. You've got wages to pay on the Wednesday. So it's all coming to a head again. So it was very, very tough. And you know, you're trying to navigate personal events during that time.
Including your baby.
Including our baby, prior to that, our marriage, or our wedding rather. And, you know, you're looking ahead. I remember we got married in June 2009. So at the start of 2009, I had said to myself, whatever happens, I'm keeping this business on the road until after the wedding. I do not want anything to go sideways prior to then. Just because you're thinking about other people, you're thinking about your family, extended family, etc. So you're just trying to target these milestones to get through them. But, you know, very, very difficult. A lot of scars, no doubt about that.
And yet, and you mentioned it there, you had the itch. Because I keep saying to everybody who's self-employed, including myself, we're all mad, is that you want to go out and kind of beat the head off the concrete again. And yet you took the decision to go back into business, a completely different business, because you saw that opportunity.
Yeah, and I think one thing I learned during the financial crash and the experience with the family business was that I did have a resilience. I did not stop while everything was going on with that company. And there were difficult days, you know, very, very difficult days, difficult weeks, difficult months. And you're just trying to get through it. But I knew that I kept going, and I knew that that experience would stand to me if I did create a new business, or if I did pursue a new opportunity. I knew that I'd accumulated a hell of a lot of experience, because, you know, in a business like that, you're dealing with marketing, you're dealing with logistics, you're dealing with HR, you're dealing with regulatory. So I knew the experience would stand to me. And even when we ceased trading and I was 30 years of age, I said to myself, I could well be one of the most experienced 30-year-olds in business in
the
country.
Which is probably true.
It could well be, yeah. So, yeah, I didn't have too many concerns about that. And when you think about it, when you've got the weight of a large family business on you, and then you're weighing up taking on something more agile, it is more achievable.
Except that there is a certain attraction for working for somebody else. Now, I wouldn't choose it myself, but for many others, to make sure that somebody else, it's somebody else's job to make sure that you're paid on a Friday. It's not your job to make sure you're paid on a Friday, if you follow me.
I do, and there's a lot of comfort in that, you know.
That's what I mean. And you presumably took comfort in that from 2012 to 2017, but 5 years later, you dived in, whichever one you wish. Why or how did you actually choose gaming?
I think I saw that it was the sweet spot in a lot of skills that I had.
But were you sitting on your couch? Were you reading magazines? What actually prompted you to specifically gaming?
Well, I think there was definitely one trigger. There was one event in Ireland in March 2017. It was in the convention centre in Dublin. It was called GamerCon.
I think we did not discuss this beforehand, but I do remember, am I right in saying there might have been some headlines?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Of the wrong type.
This was before I got into the gaming space. So GamerCon was probably the first big large-scale gaming event in Ireland. It was St. Patrick's weekend in 2017. They did a really good job in terms of the partners they had and the marketing that they did, and they got a fantastic turnout. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, they ran into difficulty because they had oversold relative to the capacity of the venue. And what happened was it was a cold, wet weekend in March. So
funny that, Ireland.
Yeah. So there was a lot of people, a lot of families that couldn't access the venue.
I remember they were stuck outside. Yeah.
And there was massive fallout in the media about it. So that was probably one of the triggers, because they had a significant audience. I saw, well, there's a market there for it.
Well, sorry, I'm going to stop you again. You're sitting reading the papers about this. I mean, you could have gone, I have no idea what other things you might have looked at. You might have gone into pubs, clubs, making music, whatever. But you're reading headlines, and there were bad headlines, about this event, and yet you chose that business to go into.
Yeah, well, I don't think that the bad headlines were a reflection of this type of business. It was just something that had gone wrong. These things happen. I'm not party to exactly what went on, but, you know, these things happen. So, you know, I knew that the gaming space was on a phenomenal trajectory. Obviously did a lot of market research, looked at a lot of events internationally, traveled to a lot of events to see what they were doing, to see what I could take away and use for my own events. And like I say, there were skills I had that I knew I could deliver the events, from ticket marketing. I had extensive experience in sponsorship management, event management. So, yeah, I thought this was a good opportunity. It was something I was able to do initially part-time in Galway. We had our first event in November 2017 in the Galmont Hotel. So I was able to do that part-time while I was still in my full-time role. Pulled it together on a shoestring. I had a contact of mine develop the website and the brand. I had a small budget for ticket marketing, started selling tickets, and the revenues I generated went back into marketing. And really, you know, had to beg, borrow and steal to get it over the line. But we had, you know, over 1,000 people at it. The feedback was fantastic. The buzz doing it, Cunnell, was fantastic. You know, I remember clearly it was about 3 weeks before the event, and we had it penciled in for a 2-day event, Saturday and Sunday, and the ticket sales were absolutely nowhere. And I said to myself, this thing is going to be tumbleweed now. This is awful.
Oh,
so
dear.
I met with the team that were helping me, and we were looking at options, and we discussed shortening it to a 1-day event. But we decided to stay the course. And I think it was a night or two later, I had a dream, and I was in the event and it was full of people.
Okay.
And I thought, okay, let's keep going. Let's keep going, fingers crossed. And sure enough, probably a week to 10 days before the event, the ticket sales took off.
Any reason why? Did you ever figure it out? Or is it just the Irish thing?
It's the Irish thing. It's lastminute.com. And there's a late purchasing cycle for events, for tickets in this country. I'm guilty of it myself, so I can't complain. But it took off and then ran the event. I remember it clearly. Place was packed. Everyone was happy. And, you know, even at that kind of small level, it was an incredible sense of achievement because I had done that absolutely by myself. You know, I was working evenings, working weekends, trying to get it over the line and really from a standing start. So I had no connections in gaming companies or the content creators we had mentioned. It was just a really steep learning curve. And in fact, because I hadn't really gamed since college, it was almost like a crash course in gaming knowledge again. You know, what are people playing now? What's popular? How do I engage with this audience? So it was really exciting. From there, we continued to do events regionally. We brought it to Thomond Park Stadium for 2 years, which went really well. And then ultimately, our goal was always to come to Dublin. But we used the smaller events outside of Dublin to build our credibility and our track record. So when we did go to Dublin, then looking for that bigger audience, we were in a good place to do so.
So what is the future for you, for the company? Because we love companies who are thinking beyond the small little island on which we live. Could you bring this abroad? And there are other, I mean, there are many, many, many events outside of here.
Yeah.
Can you do something different?
There's options in that regard. You know, we can bring this event to other markets ourselves. We can grow it further here in Ireland. There's potential licensing options down the road. There's also a lot of potential in the event here in Dublin that we have yet to tap. A lot of potential. And I feel we're only scratching the surface with Gamerfest at the moment.
How big an audience would you think is realistic here?
Over time, I think on the consumer side of the show, I think 20,000 visitors will be achievable.
But that's over a weekend. Is that 2 10,000?
2 10,000, correct. Yeah, over the course of a weekend. And then, as I mentioned, the industry zone is very, very important to us as well. So, you know, maybe 2 to 3,000 people attending that in a B2B capacity alongside the consumer show.
Well, that'd be huge.
It would, yeah, yeah.
I mean, that'd be really big.
It would, yeah. So, I mean, that would entail international visitors looking at opportunities here in Ireland. But, you know, the likes of Enterprise Ireland, IDEA, they're already working hard in this area. So we want to be that B2B event that collaborates with them, as I say, can be a platform for our companies in this country.
Now, I know almost nothing at all about gaming, so I'm going to go beyond that now into AI. What is AI going to do for gaming? What is, I mean, it's, things are just changing so quickly.
They are. And honestly, Conan, AI is beyond me as well. You know, I think we're all scrambling to keep up. You know, we had a family event. We had our daughter's communion there at the weekend.
This is the daughter who was born.
It was, no, our second.
Second,
our second,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, and we were talking with some family and AI came up and we were talking about that. And, you know, there's certainly nervousness out there and, you know, concern about where it's all leading. I definitely do not have the answers to that.
But for you, is there something in it for you? Or maybe there isn't something for you. For example, a convention. Why would you go to a convention if you can go to to effectively go to it online with my headset? So that I can be at GameCon or GameFest, should I say, whoops.
Yeah, GamerFest, if you don't mind, yeah.
GamerFest and sit in, whether it's in Seoul and Korea or whatever, but I can still be there because I'm wearing my headset.
Yeah, well, if you take our most recent event, we live streamed that for the first time. So we set up a live stream studio at the event and then we had a lot of the content creators that you referred to participating in that. So that was a way of bringing people into the event. But again, that's just the beginning. And, you know, initiatives like you've mentioned in terms of virtual reality, immersive experiences within the event, without a doubt, there's a lot of potential there. We would still be teasing that out and it remains to be seen what the future holds in that regard. But it's certainly something we're looking at because, you know, we have to look far beyond the four walls of the venue. There's no doubt about that.
And the four quarters of the island. Yes, no? Do you think?
In terms of audience, absolutely.
No, I mean that you can bring it. I always dream of Las Vegas or somewhere like that. Now, I know they're all there already, but are you doing anything that is different that you can bring that is different?
again, at the moment, we're pretty focused on our Dublin event because I think we have a long way to go before we earn the right to go internationally. And that's the way I would look at it. But certainly, you know, the way that we're able to work with partners, with brands, with content creators, we have a lot of very, very strong relationships. So I've no doubt that if and when we decide to look at international markets for Gamerfest, we have a lot of the building blocks in place to be able to do that pretty quickly. So from there, it'll be a question of identifying the markets where we see value, where we see an opportunity. But that's probably, I think, 12 months away, but it's on the horizon.
Well, that's not bad.
No, not too bad.
Yeah. Okay. You know, the last question we ask everybody, Stuart, who would Stuart Dempsey hire in a heartbeat?
Well, we have a great team in place and I'm talking to a handful of people that are, they know who they are. So we're excited about that. I think a hire in a heartbeat would be Bob Iger, who is CEO of Disney.
Who wasn't, but he is again.
He is again, correct. Yeah. So I read his book probably 5 years ago now, and I followed him closely ever since. He's an incredible leader, great empathy, no ego that I can see, despite the success that he's had. Took on the role of CEO with Disney in the very early 2000s when that company was at a particularly low ebb. They were struggling with, you know, 2D animation, and suddenly you had Pixar absolutely torpedo them with, you know, 3D animation, with Toy Story and these other movies. So he managed to navigate that brilliantly. He engaged with Steve Jobs, who was the controlling shareholder in Pixar. And ultimately, he was able to negotiate the acquisition of Pixar into Disney. From there, he also acquired Marvel.
Which is a fantastic move.
He acquired Star Wars. So what he did was he was able to put in place, you know, an avenue of content for years to come that would sustain Disney. He's also obviously rolled out Disney Plus more recently. He launched Disney World in Shanghai. That was a 16-year project from the day he stepped on the site to the day they opened. What? If you can imagine dealing with, you know, Chinese authorities, red tape, etc. So that was a long, long-term project. So he's had incredible success. He's at the intersection of, you know, commercials and creativity. I think he's a fantastic leader. So, Bob, if you're listening and you'd like to get involved in an exciting, dynamic Irish company, please get in touch.
What would he do for you?
I think he would be fantastic in an advisory role. Connell, I'd take that.
I was
now
hoping he was going to make you coffee or something, no?
No, I think he's a pretty strong network there that we could leverage, to be honest. So, yeah, the sky would be the limit on what he could offer. But, yeah, I'd recommend the book. The book is called Ride of a Lifetime for anyone that hasn't read it.
I haven't, and he does sound like a fascinating individual, all right, yeah. Pity he's not called Bob O. Iger from Galway, wouldn't that be the
Bob
one?
Bob O. Iger, yeah. If he had family here, that would be convenient.
Okay. Stuart Dempsey, CEO and founder of Gamerfest. Please come back to us in a year's time when you're going to go international with Bob. Bob will be the boy to bring you international. Thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks, Connell. Really enjoyed it.
Dundeal Motors is home to Ireland's largest range of new and premium used cars. That's why you'll find cars from Audi and BMW dealerships on Dundeal. Are you looking for a seven-seater to accommodate your growing family? Maybe you're after a luxury saloon to make a statement. We have the car for you. You'll also find Ireland's largest range of electric cars to help you make the switch. Visit dundeal.ie today to start the search for your next car.
De Facto Shaving Oil, the world's best shaving oil, made in Mayo, sold worldwide. It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com. That Great Business Show.
And that's it from That Great Business Show, episode 144, Great Business Insights and Inspiration. All thanks to our sponsor, Dundeal.ie, the only place to find your next car, new or secondhand. Do sign up for our email updates at thatgreatbusinessshow.com and we will send you the latest news as well as your own personal copy of the podcast that you can then send on to all of your pals and show off to them how great you are. If you want to advertise with us, do get us on the website. And we record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where Lee Brennan is today's sound engineer. Peter Rice will add his magic later on, making us the best sound around. So from me, Conal O'Moran, buíochas to you all, agus slán tamall.